Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back this week to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. The weather has been beautiful, just hard time of the year to find anything to complain about, and we're here today catching up with Andre Davis. He's been busy in the fly fishing world, is what he was just telling me. Andre, what you been up to?
Hey, man. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, mostly that. And it's been neat this fall. Everybody's got, you know, really good stuff going on. A lot of community service-oriented work, not just in the kind of common sense of picking up trash and that kind of thing, although there's been a lot of that too. But really holding big events. One Fly, we just had it. That's a great event for, you know, the Coosa Riverkeeper puts on. Chad and team did a great job with that. That was a ton of fun down there. Had good numbers of folks who turned out, had really good catch numbers. I think it was 131 or 134 maybe fish in 27, you know, folks who were competing. Competing is a loose term. It's very, 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 very community-based. We made fun of each other more than we competed hard. And really great event there. And then been trying to get my smallmouth this year before they all go, you know, up at the bigger water. So I've been making some hard runs at that.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. The One Fly event, always, every year I see it on social media and it looks like a blast and I always end up missing it. But that looks like a great time with some great people and for a good cause too.
Yeah, and, you know, like I say, a lot of folks really turned up out there. Competition was really good. Weather was good, you know. Not this season, but the one before, on the first one that they did, we had a cold snap came in the night before it started, like in the 30s. So pretty hard cold snap. And then a really windy day on the tournament. And we still had a ton of fun. But then you make it this year where we were in, I think it was in the 70s, you know, 50s at night, 70s during the day, high 70s, if I remember right, 77, 78, somewhere in there. It was just awesome. It was absolutely awesome. I did not fare all that well with actually catching the black bass, but I ended up with one of the most diverse days I've ever had on the water at all. I caught an orange spotted sunfish, bluegill, red breast, long ear, catfish, shadow bass, spots. Here are some of the cleanest red eye, Coosa red eye in particular, that I've ever caught. All just messing around, you know, in a couple different stretches of the waterway. So it's a really cool biodiverse area. I think they're doing a great job to bring mindfulness to it and to clean up where it's needed down there. And the camping was great, good community stuff. We had a big bonfire. A lot of stories were told, live music, had a low country boil. I mean, I would have gone for any one of those things, and they really packed it in, so it was really cool.
Man, that sounds like a good time. And I remember seeing your social media post when you caught that catfish, and that's something I have not done. And I'm sure I'll stumble across one eventually here because there's no shortage of them. I've run trot lines and caught hundreds of them. My wife still talks about the year of the catfish where we filled a chest freezer and she finally put her foot down and said she was not eating any more of them. But I'll run across them eventually, but I haven't yet. So that's pretty cool. That's not a species you usually think of as being a fly rod fish.
Yep, agreed.
Well, tell me some more. It just never has worked out for me this fall. I've been wanting to get up there and chase some smallmouths, and I saw you post the other night where you were tying up some flies to go chase them. What's the word on that?
Man, I am not the best resource for smallmouth. This is one of those things where I am in the process of, you know, chasing these things down and trying to figure something out, really. There are a lot of folks who, you know these things inside and out, and there's some fish I'm like that on. Smallmouth are not one of them, not yet, but I will tell you the fun I've had doing it. So whether you really know them or not, I'll encourage, get out there and go and chase them. They're in really cool places. I mean, I think that's true just across Alabama, just in general in the state. We're just incredibly, incredibly fortunate to have the natural environments that we do. But I was chasing them in small creeks. That's kind of my deal, you know, and I have yet to chase them on bigger water. But you know, even right here in North Alabama and, you know, and over the Tennessee state line, I've got some good friends who would correct me on that and remind me that there are, in fact, no smallmouth in Alabama. You're going to need to keep on going north and going to Tennessee for that. But should you happen to stumble across the place you think they are in Alabama, on your way up to Tennessee, then in these small creeks, you're fishing, to be honest with you, a whole lot like red eye. You're going to look for a lot of the same structure, a lot of the same creek or river bottoms, a lot of stone, bottoms. I was in some really pretty limestone ones. They were catching the sun and heating up well. Last weekend was right after the full moon, so that was a little bit different. They like to feed really heavily, from what I got told by some folks who know better than me. They like to feed really heavily when that full moon is out like that. They'll eat all night. And I was in the second day of the full moon when I was up there last weekend, and so they were even more difficult to get to eat than what I understand they usually are. Just they seemed like they were pretty gorged. I got a lot of them stunning the flies. They would come in and just hit them, or they would come in, if it was top water, they would nose it and push it. And I was joking with a buddy. I said it looked like how orcas do when you train them, or dolphins, or this kind of thing, where they get like a ball and they push it around the aquarium. It was like that. And and it's just so interesting, but they weren't eating. And I did get one to eat, and he ate in kind of the way that's fabled. He just blew up on it. And he gave me a good 20-second fight, got him to hand, and it wouldn't have been that long, but I was in pretty shallow water. And right when I went to lift him to get him in the net, I was in ankle deep water at best. He kicked his tail on dry land and shook himself loose, and so had an LDR. So none actually in the net yet, but that's the first one I've actually got hooked up with. As much as I fish, that's the first one I've got hooked up with. So I'm going for a redemption run this weekend. But I'll tell you, they like to look up in that skinny water, and the leaf hatch is not in full effect yet. So that's still pretty easy to do. Once the leaf hatch gets really, really in full effect, it's going to be harder to do your top water and not be just catching leaves, and to tell your fly apart from the leaves. But right now, you're still clear up there, and so I would say get in there and get after it. Top water did great. We got the most attention that way. You say that throwing streamers, unless you can see them, which in these low clear waters you definitely could. Then you can watch them eat subsurface, but you can always watch them eat top water, right? So, and we got a lot of attention, just not any commitment. And still fun, caught, we stopped counting, unholy numbers of redbreast. So still had a great time.
That sounds awesome. You'd mentioned leaf hatch earlier when we were texting and setting this whole conversation up, and I was like, I wonder what the leaf hatch is. But that makes sense. We don't get that a lot down here. We're not really renowned for our fall colors down here on the lower coastal plain. I guess our cypress trees change color and we get some river maples, but we don't get that. But I've seen it. I've been up there around DeSoto when this time of the year you got the drought and that little river is still. And yeah, like you get a windy day, blows all them leaves down, and you can't do nothing on top water. So we get down here, what we get in the summertime, I guess that's similar, as we get in the backwaters, we'll get pollen so thick that it almost looks early in the morning like sandy beaches, like it looks like you think you're looking at a mud flat and you're just looking at pollen and scum that thick on the top of the water. It's making my sinuses flare up just thinking about it back about this spring and this summer.
Yeah, we get a pretty serious leaf hatch around here. And everything from the leaves, and then pine straw, and then pine straw stuck to leaves, and then gets stuck to your fly, and then you're just pulling this, train of stuff with your fly, and you peel it off and you cast again so you can catch some more leaves. And it's just part and parcel to it. I was talking to some buddies, and we have our tying night coming up. It's really a community night for Okaooba Fly on Thursday this week. And if anyone's interested, shameless plug for Mayfly, if you're interested in being a mentor, you're anywhere around the Birmingham area Thursday night, we're going to meet at Cahaba Brewing Company there in Birmingham. And it'll be both. So the club night is that night, which is, you don't have to be like a member of the club. It's just a wide open invitation. Show up, tie, cast, talk, share stories, do nothing but drink beer and play skee ball, all of the above, And so we keep the agenda really light, and it's just for community to come together. And this week, though, we'll be doing the Mayfly meeting as well. So if you have questions about it, you always wanted to know what it would be like, what it takes to be a mentor, come and sit with us. We'd love to talk to you about it. But same folks I was talking to about the leaf hatch, and I was telling them, they're like, what's something that we can do to try to do that better? And there's lots of answers to that. Kind of the one that I have been going with the last couple of years has been good is, start dropping stuff off of indicators, and so one of the things we're going to tie at the community night is I'm going to show people how to make dorsey indicators, you know, if you've not ever done those macrame yarn indicator, and then weightless patch rubber legs. And you drop those things down, from what I understand, including in smallmouth water, pelgramite, same kind of idea, you know, but drop those underneath of an indicator. And then, cause you're going to want these, the water's low, the water's clear. You're going to do probably better, to avoid trying to spook these fish. So, that weightless fly will get plenty deep enough. It'll spook less whenever it lands. The Dorsey is, it has almost no weight whatsoever to it, truly no weight. And so it's a good stealth way to do it. Not going to have to worry as much about the leaves getting in your way. And, you know, these are just tried and true bugs that, that work well for bass, whether you're in my neck of the woods around Birmingham fishing for red eye, or up north looking at smallmouth, and everything in between. So, you know, Bales Hatchling Crawl from Brandon Bales does great. You know, if you don't want to do the Dorsey, get you a Sam's One Bug and you can do a dry dropper, float it off, you know, mini meats underneath of it, doing crayfish kind of imitations, that kind of deal. Buggers, of course, can be dead drifted, all that kind of stuff. And it's been working really great around here. It's not even leaf hatch just yet, but it will have happened before the next time I talk to you, Nick. So just to kind of gear some people up for kind of how to, one way at least, to try to manage through that.
Absolutely, yeah. I've never heard it called a Dorsey before. I did a quick Google, and I've fished for sure with some yarn indicators, especially doing the Suncatch Slam. I know you said you got on an orange-spotted sunfish, and that's a fish where if you're trying to get a little nymph in front of him and keep it there in the slack water, that's the way to go. If anybody wants to go catch an orange-spotted sunfish, a little yarn indicator will actually let you see them take it, because they won't move even the tiny Oros indicators. The time they hit that little size 22 zebra midge and spit it back out, you'll miss it.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right. And they're really easy to make and cheap, so.
Tell me, how long do you think y'all usually have up there before the fishing starts to kind of go into the winter pattern? Like, is that something here? I mean, I feel like we're just getting back to where it's kind of pleasant to fish here in the past couple of weeks. When do y'all usually start getting cold enough that most people kind of start thinking more about the holidays and sitting inside, you know, sipping a beverage than getting out there on the water?
Yeah. Well, off the top of my head, I got two answers to that. One is as soon as football starts, and no matter what the weather's doing outside. And two, you know, as far as the weather goes, I don't know. I mean, because, you know, being in Alabama, you just never know what the weather's going to actually do. You know, we had a pretty cold night last week, and it really kind of threw things for a loop. Plus, we had the full moon, and that made things interesting. So we had a lot of different elements, and we haven't had any rain, and then no rain this week either. Everything's super low and clear. So, you know, as far as how the fish pattern with getting into fall and the cooler season, it varies dramatically, right? Because we're in the 80s again this week. And so it can really throw them off of their game, and it does really interesting things for their metabolic patterns, you know, quite frankly. And it varies, man. I mean, usually for me, at least in my head, when I'm kind of looking at my calendar, picking trips, what I'm going to do during which time in a given month, I usually look at November. It's kind of, you know, I really start looking at changing how I approach bass and stuff, because I'll fish these fish all the way through the winter. We always try to do our red eye slam on January 1st just to see if we can do it. You know, so I mean, I'll fish it straight through the whole winter. But as far as expectations of when that fall pattern is going to change, and again, I'm primarily in the smaller creeks, you know, so these fish are going to move up and they're going to get in the bigger water. So these guys who are on boats, their timeline, I think, can go quite a bit longer than what I'm doing, waiting in small stuff. So those fish are moving into that bigger water. Those guys love throwing streamers. I mean, you'll see it all across the board in the forums and everything. They come alive in the fall. You know, they'll tell you that's their favorite time of the year. And they'll start throwing some of your bigger stuff, peanut envies, swimmy jimmies, and the larger black leeches, you know, this kind of stuff. And hitting things like, you know, the bigger parts of the Coosa, the Tallapoosa for sure, you know, going through Hargrove in the Cahaba, this kind of thing. And they just light them up in there. Those fish that they're just smoking out there have usually moved out of the little creeks that I'm in. So things just change up a little bit for me, and they change up sooner. So November is kind of the hard cutoff, even in Alabama. Usually, you get more stabilized, you know, fall transition weather by then.
Well, it definitely sounds then like people still got some time to sneak that in there before deer season and football kicks off, and before it's time to dedicate yourself to the holidays. Me and my boss was just having the conversation the other day. A lot of guys shoot themselves in the foot by trying to play too much during the holidays, and then they mess themselves up come a deer rut. So, or
Yeah.
spring turkey season or whatever it is. So it's good to go ahead and get out of your system now before the holidays sneak up on us. Andre, always good to hear from you, man. And yeah, tell us one more time about the fly tying event that you got coming up this weekend, in case any of our listeners want to stick their head in the door and say howdy.
Yeah, it's the Okauba Fly Club. And so it's something that I started. Okauba is the Choctaw word for the Cahaba River. And really cool deal. There's also a kind of a the flagship beer over at Cahaba Brewing Company is called the Okauba IPA. So they were kind to let me utilize that name as well. And again, it's an open invitation. There's no expectation. You don't have to be a master tier. I'm certainly not. You don't even have to tie at all. You can just come and hang out. It's just a good place for folks in the community to come together and spend some time. 6 to 8 p.m. is kind of the official time. Cahaba is very kind to give us a whole section up by the brewing, the viewing window of the brewery. So we have a designated spot. You're not going to be fighting for a seat or anything like that. I bring all the material, so you don't have to worry about it. Got vices, material, all the rest. You want to come out and learn. You don't have to worry about bringing anything. If you have your favorite vice and all that, by all means, bring it, and one last thing of encouragement just for the transition season as it goes out, and especially with the slow water we've got right now. One thing I'd encourage people to, and I'm going to talk about this on Thursday at the event a little bit, but this is a great time to go and study your water. When it is low and clear like this, go and look at what that structure looks like. And not just your laydowns and trees and all that, but what does the substrate, of that river look like? See where the little holes are that you normally can't see, figure out, oh, well, that's where that big rock is, and that must be what that bass always comes out from underneath of, and really it's a good time to get familiarized with your waterway. And that way, once you come into next spring and on into next summer and stuff, you got to really, just a pro level understanding of your waterway. If you'll spend some time, even though when it's harder fishing, it's a really great learning opportunity, and it'll just make you all that much better. Come next season, as it does start to wind down, we start watching football, hunting deer, all the rest of it. So that's that. And just to say, keep praying for the folks up in the Carolinas, and elsewhere that have been hit by Helene. And lots of folks in this community have been going back and forth and working with them and helping take care of them, unloading stuff off of the planes at the airport, get pallets of water and all the rest. I've been seeing it all over the place. I've been helping where I can with some good folks up in Maggie Valley that I know. And so I just want to encourage people that our community has been showing up for that. So have many, many, many others. For everybody who's been involved in that, just a public thank you. Really cool to see that happen.
Absolutely. We're glad to hear that you're helping them out up there. I know we had Peter Jordan on last time to talk about Appalachia Strong, and same thing I told folks last time. We know what it feels like to get hit by a hurricane, and any help that you extend is very likely to rebound on you. It could be our turn to get one next year here in Alabama. So definitely want to look out for our neighbors.
You got it. Nick, I appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by. Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, Air Medcare is the largest air ambulance network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year, or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll. All righty, guys, welcome back. This time we got Lee Pitts coming in off the Coosa system. Lee, what you been up to lately?
Man, hey, we're just looking forward to this time that we've all waited for all through the summer. We got a little touch of fall in the air. The leaves are starting to change a little bit. And I would say, the 3rd September, 3rd October is always good, but the 3rd October wasn't real good for us Alabama boys this last week.
Well, can't win them all.
Yeah, I guess we got spoiled a little bit with our football, so just part of it.
That's it. All streaks must come to an end, and it sucks, but man, it was a good streak there for a while, so.
It was. It's like I said. It's a I'm roll tide, win or lose. So that's just part of it.
There we go. Well, hopefully the fishing is treating us a little bit better than the football. What y'all been catching up there?
It is. It's picking up. You know, we've had a long hot summer, and it's just been one of those deals that the water temperature is coming down a little bit. You know, it's got out of those high numbers and down mid low 60s. So the fish are starting to move a little bit, especially on our crappie end of it. You know, that's what this time of year we have so many of our out of towners that are coming in, and they love this Weiss Neely Henry crappie fishing. And it's picking up. We're starting to see, I guess with technology, everybody has gotten where, you know, I put so much faith into my hummingbirds, and I can ease up and down these river ledges and river channels and finding the brush. And it's almost like you can count apples on the limbs. So there's starting to be more and more show up. So that's a good thing.
There we go. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I know, man, this weather is just, I've said it before, sometimes I sound like a broken record, but all summer I was complaining about how hot it was. And, but man, it's nice now. Like, that's a good thing about the summer heat is when that first breath of fall comes in, you're thankful for it.
You're right. And it's kind of like, hey, we've got new life. You know, the deer are feeling better. The fish are starting to move more. I get up in the mornings and my dog's even got a little higher step to them. So this fall fishing here, we're up, you know, seeing more and more of our crappie getting on that, and not just with our crappie, our bass too. It's they're all knowing it's time to start feeding up on our waters here. You know, we've had in the last couple of weeks on Weiss and on Neely, several of your clubs are having their classics. Several of these other bigger tournament organizations, you know, they try to get that October weather to start having some of their big end of the year blowouts. So had a lot of traffic on the water, but people are catching fish, and that's a good thing. As long as they're catching them, may not be catching the size they're wanting, but as long as they're catching fish and got something to bring to the weigh-in bag, you know, it's got everybody smiling a little bit.
There we go. What's been your go-to strategies right now? How are you getting on them?
I tell you what, on our crappie end, man, Bobby Garland is the bait around here. It's I love the baby shad and the slab slayers, but we've got some new products out right now with that head turner jig. Garland's making some of their own jig heads now, and they got that brush off and the head turner. Some of you that hadn't seen this is a new product out with Bobby Garland, and the head turner is kind of a little unique deal. We're looking at, you know, like an 1/8 ounce jig head, but it's got two little bitty willow leaves on each side of the head of it. And this thing is putting off some flash that normally when we're taking either a jigging spoon or live bait or something to get down there on that deeper vertical structure, you can take this and really, really cause those fish to come out of that brush and get a hold of this. So that's something that's been really exciting for us. And also here with our dock shooting, you know, we up and down the Coosa, we've got so many, not only the, you know, the stationary stable docks, but also the floating docks and things like that. But the fish really relate to them, and people are really, really turning on to that dock shooting.
That's awesome. I pulled it up, and I'm looking at that Bobby Garland head turner. I don't know if they didn't have it out or if I just missed it. I don't remember seeing it at ICAST, but it looks really good for anybody looking for a mental picture. It reminds me of a Roadrunner, but it's got, like Lee said, it's got two willow leaves on it, and it looks like it would be awesome down here where I'm at. We got real muddy water, and anything to make flash and make some disturbance is usually gold. I'm going to have to put that on my buy list.
And that's the whole deal. It's something that I've been playing with it. You know, we got ours back in the summer, and I've been looking at it and playing with it, and not only with our crappie, but some of you guys that like to get out there and chase those white bass, they will annihilate it. So it's a multi-species bait, I guess you would say, but puts off a great flash. And the biggest thing is with how they've got these blades set on the sides of the jig head, it doesn't let that bait roll. It stays straight with you. It really, really puts off a lot of flash, and you can get it down there on a vertical approach and just dance it around on some of these, you know, the deeper brush piles, deeper tree limbs and things like that. And it'll pull those fish out. You can watch them. I know a lot of the live scope guys, they're really, really liking this bait. puts off a lot of flash. You got a good feel to it. You know, you can stay in contact with that bait, and you can pick it up real good on that live scope.
Yeah, I can see that being a good point as well. You mentioned another jig head that they were making. I barely caught the name. You said brush something?
This is a brush off, and what it is, it's more for your really getting in the thick of that structure. It's got a little bitty piece of wire that comes off from underneath the eyelet where you tie it on, and this little piece of, it's like piano wire that comes out. And it's a small piece, but it keeps that bait from getting hung up as much. You can, and I've tried to hang it, especially shooting under docks where you got a lot of your Christmas trees and brush piles that people put under there to hold the fish that normally, once you touch that brush, you're hung up. This helps you to pull it on through, and it hooks up with all of your garland baits that are, you know, that if you like the slab slayer, the minnowminders, and things like that, you know, some of your compact baits that you can really, really skip well under docks. This is a great jig head for that. I mean, it really does a good job.
That's awesome. Let me ask you this. I know a common joke is that people will call a weedless jig head a fishless jig head, because sometimes that weed guard can get in the way of a hookup. Have you had good hookups with them?
I have, and it's something that it's thin enough that once that fish grabs a hold to it, and it doesn't roll that bait. You know, so many of them, just like you said, it's a little too stiff. And when a fish does try to clamp down on it, it'll roll and twist that hook a little bit. But, man, I have had some, you know, great response with it. Everything I can say so far has been good about getting it out of brush and my hookups. So it's something that a lot of the dock shooters, a lot of the guys, and it's a great jig head to throw under a float too. I mean, you can kind of dance it around stuff, and it'll just climb through brush and over stumps and things like that. So it's a great product we just come out with.
Yeah, that looks really awesome. I know down here, that's two really exciting products. I can always use a little bit more flash, and then, you know, everybody's heard the old truism, and it is just true. It gets said a lot, but that don't stop it from being true. You know, if you're not getting hung up, you're not fishing tight enough to cover. So anything to keep you off that cover is good down here where I'm at. And it's interesting what you said about catching striped bass on crappie lures. I know that's a big fish, but I catch a lot of bass. And down here we got like shoe pick, and I've caught some really big shoe pick on a little roadrunner underspin like that. Just a little, you know, inch and a half, 2 inch long crappie bait in the spring, and they'll hit it. Big fish eat small minnows for sure.
You know, and in the fall, it's even more. We've got some guys at some of the marinas, and it's kind of a joke, but you can see them when they go to get their live bait in the morning. They're flipping those 2-3 inch, you know, 3.5 inch minnows back in the bat. They don't want those big minnows. They want those little bitty ones, because that's kind of the forage right now. You know, the biggest stripe that I have ever caught on the Coosa chain was 31.5 pounds. And I caught it on 6-pound test with a 12-foot trolling rod and a Bobby Garland baby shad. So go figure.
You know? Yeah. Hey, like I said, I compare it to this. If I'm walking by a table at a party and I have to get a plate out, I may eat. But if you got finger food, like, I'll grab an hors d'oeuvre real quick. Like, yeah. Even if I'm not that hungry, if there's a little bite and I can just grab it and eat it and go, I'm going to pick it up.
Well, that's me, but I've got the problem. I like to keep on making that loop.
Well, hey, there we go. Maybe the fish are the same way. Maybe they'd rather have lots of small meals sometimes. I feel like, especially in spring and fall, a lot of times, I just got through writing a best bets column that we're going to do, that's going to come out in, I guess, December, talking about afternoon farm pond fishing. And, you know, them farm ponds will warm up on them warm afternoons. You know, if it's getting cold at night and warm in the afternoon, you can go out there on a farm pond and you can do real well, but you got to downsize your baits.
Exactly.
Has always been my experience.
Yeah. That's his kids. That's where we always hit those farm ponds, or if you were close enough to a golf course and they didn't run you off, that was kind of the same type deal that we would get into.
Yeah, man. I remember the days that the Marshall, he used to run me off on the regular. And, sadly, as I got older and now I'm distinguished enough and I'm smart enough, you know, if you wear your polo shirt and you tuck it in And if you dress right, you can get away with stuff like that. But then sadly,
Yeah,
you
you
just
got to
you
try to fit in.
that's it. That's it. But you don't know that as a kid, and you're running around in a pair of cutoffs and a stained shirt, that same shirt you had on yesterday when you was out there fishing. That's a different look.
And that's just exactly like you said. When we grew up, it was those your school pants from the spring, and when it turned to summer, you cut them off in shorts. And most time, we didn't have shoes on or shirts, so we were not hard to see that we were not in the right place.
That's it. That's it. Well, Lee, what's it going to look like? I know as it starts to cool off and everything, what's the bike going to look like for folks going out this weekend? But then also, I like to try to let people plan ahead. What's it going to look like as we start rolling over into November? How's that bike going to transition?
You know, really, it used to that the end of September, the first week or two of October, things were changing. Now, here in the last couple of years, that summer has held on a little bit longer. So November is kind of our key time. Our top water bites, you know, the buzz bait, the spook, small prop baits and things like that really start turning back on in that late October, November. And not just a morning and evening bite. It's that all day. You can throw a buzz bait or you can throw a little prop bait or something all day long and be productive with it, you know, that time of year. The square bill is something good now. You know, everybody still throws a spinnerbait or a chatterbait, but sometimes you can swap up with that little John or some kind of little flat-sided crankbait and knock around the shallows. Like I said, these fish are chasing bait. Most of the bait is coming up in the bays. They're getting around some kind of wood cover, some rock, things like that, shallow, and you can just kind of make a day of it, just running pockets and running some of these longer points, especially with your bass and with your crappie. Also, they'll still be out there deep on the river ledges, in that deeper brush, but they get up on these shallow docks pretty good too around here. It's one of those things. You get a lot of sunshine through the day, those 3 to 5, 6 foot docks that you're going to have some fish on, especially if you're closer to some deeper water. So, you know, it's pretty much, you can stay productive all day. It's not just a morning and evening bite this time of year.
That's awesome to hear, man. It sounds like some great fishing. If folks want to get in touch with you and check out that Coosa River system, where's a good place to look you up?
Man, the best way, you can give me a call at 256-390-4145. And keep a watch on my Facebook page. It'll be Lee Pitts Facebook. And I try to post pictures through the day, what we've done. And like I said, just give me a call and we can set you up and get you out there catching some of these big Alabama slab crappie. And also, you got some good bass fishing coming your way too.
There we go. Well, Lee, I always appreciate a report from you. And guys, if y'all looking for a good fishing trip, y'all definitely go check him out. Lee's the man up there on the Coosa.
Man, I appreciate that. Thank you. And like I said, we're still gonna get you up here one day and get you out and show you what it's about up here.
Absolutely. I need to get up there. Can't wait. And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all will take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Buck's Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Buck's. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Visit Mississippi. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are lots of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails and recreational sites, 25 parks, and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. Rounding out this week, got a conversation that's been a while in the making. Peter Jordan, y'all be familiar with him. He sent me Jim Shulin's contact information over at TFO. And we're here today to talk with Jim about some of the conventional rods that TFO makes. But before we dive into that, Jim, welcome to the show for the first time.
Well, thank you very much, Nick. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Tell our listeners where you're based out of.
I'm based out of Fort Worth, Texas. Our factory and headquarters or warehouse, as I like to call it, is in Grand Prairie, Texas. We're about a mile as the crow flies from where the Dallas Cowboys and the Texas Rangers play ball.
There we go. What we were talking a little bit about the type fishing that you do, and I know you mentioned we talked a little bit about Guadalupe bass, and you said that you caught them incidentally. What are you usually fishing for out there in Texas?
Well, black bass is king, right? It's just probably like it is there in Alabama.
That's it. Yeah.
So it's a lot of bass, you know. But we got sand bass runs up these creeks, and I love fishing little creeks, you know, for bluegill, sunfish. We call everything a bluegill down here in Texas. Doesn't matter what, it's a red ear or pumpkin seed, it's a bluegill. And I, you know, I just love doing that sort of thing with ultralight rods or fly rods still.
That's your man after my own heart. Yeah, we got a bunch of big water down here, and we got the reservoirs and everything. But man, I started on creeks as a kid, and most people grow out of it, and I just never did. Give me a creek or a golf course pond, and I'm happy.
There's a little lake close by here, Squaw Creek. It's a power plant lake, and they've got tilapia in it. And if you catch tilapia, you must keep them. And they make really good fish tacos. I'm gonna go try my hand at those this winter when the winter cools off. It'll be the first time I've really tried to target them.
You targeting on conventional or fly tackle?
It'll be conventional.
Conventional.
Yeah, bait, slip bobbers. And this is, I'm hunting meat.
There's a local place down here, kind of a ranch, and it's set up. They do a lot of stuff with church youth groups and Boy Scouts and stuff like that. And the guy that owns the place, real well-known family here, business owner, and he's got this big, gorgeous lake, and he stocks it with tilapia. And the boathouse down there has all the fishing rods for the kids, and they'll put them, you get a bunch of kids, and you turn that feeder on, and you get them tilapia going under that feeder, and you start putting them little kids on them great big, huge tilapia. It's like bluegill on steroids. They'll hit whatever, you know, real low fishing pressure. Feeder goes off, dinner bell rings, and next thing you know, you got four kids bowed up, doubled over. Looks like the same.
I wonder if I could talk those guys in the power plant into setting up a feeder for us before we go.
I've been trying to figure out that for years, how to get feeders paid for on the local duck pond by me. And if you figure it out, let me know what the secret is. I've talked with county commissioners and state officials, and just can't make it happen. Well, I know. I feel like most of our listeners are going to be familiar with TFO and the fly rods that y'all make. You know, y'all got a reputation. Yeah, and y'all kind of have the reputation as the working man's fly rod. I know y'all make y'all's rods in South Korea. And for people who don't know, I've always been pretty happy with anything come out of South Korea. In another lifetime, I was a big guitar aficionado. And man, the like Washburn was my brand, just as far as like bang for your buck.
My daughter's got a Washburn.
They're good guitars, man. Like Gibson and Fenders. I mean, they're great guitars too. But if you got $400 to buy a guitar, unless things have changed, like Washburn was the name of the game. And I've handled a lot of TFO rods, and you know, it's just one of them things. Winstons are nice, Loomis and Orvis and all that, but as far as a fishing rod, like I said, y'all built a really, really good reputation as just a no-nonsense working man's rod. We've had Nick Conklin on here to talk about him in the past. But me and Peter were talking, and I was looking at y'all's website, and y'all really built your conventional lineup. I mean, y'all have a really good selection now on your website.
Well, yeah, we've been doing that for a long time, too. Still growing. Obviously, a lot more room to grow. We started off doing those all in the factory with our fly rods in South Korea, and we outgrew that. Guy that runs our factory and partner, great guy, BJM is his name, helped us find a factory in China. And we've been doing them there for about 8 years now, I think. Some of the rods are still made in South Korea, just the multi-piece rods, actually, the Traveler series.
Yeah.
We've also started making rods in the U.S. We've got a U.S. factory there in Grand Prairie, I was just talking about, and we're building a series of bass rods called the Sentra. We're also building an ultralight series called the Pastime, America's favorite pastime, chasing bluegill, right?
yeah.
So we got two ultralight and light, you know, crappie anglers, trout anglers, guys like me, like to fish those little creeks, and you like to fish those little creeks. Very, very good rod series for both of them. And we've also got an inshore series that we're building out of Texas as well, called the Blue Bite.
The Blue Bite. I mean, you mentioned right there, like you talked about the central bass rod, you talked about the pastime for panfish, and then you talk about inshore rod, man. That covers everything that I do down here. I mean, everything from bluegill fishing to redfish. I know since you mentioned you was a bluegill guy, I'm a bluegill guy at heart too. I will say we must be slightly more sophisticated in Alabama than y'all are in Texas, because we have bluegill, but then we have everything that's not a bluegill as a stump knocker down here. Now, I don't know if y'all got stump knockers over there, but they come in all different shapes and sizes and colors.
No, fish are smarter than knocking the stumps.
That's fair enough. Good comeback.
So we're also about to, in that US factory, we're going to be introducing a surf rod series.
Nice.
Early spring next year, late winter, early spring. So
nice.
Well, do any surf fishing for those bluegill? You're in luck.
Right. Surf fishing. No, but there's a lot of guys down here that surf fish. Pompano is a big thing. Matter of fact, I got a buddy I need to get with him. I feel like it's about the time that last year he was inviting me to go chase Pompano down on Dolphin Island. So we do a little bit of that. Me, not so much. I tend to stop inshore. Pompano's fun now. I've done it in the past. And Pompano, just hanging out on the beach and throwing some rods out there and playing in the surf, you know, just hanging out.
Like, we've got some pro staffers in your neck of the woods there with our surf rods. I want to go down there.
Absolutely. Yeah, come down and do it. Dolphin Island's beautiful. I love going down there every chance I get. Talk to me a little bit about this pastime rod, because I'm sitting here looking at it. Looks like y'all got the light, the ultralight. Yeah, made in the USA. Man, that's a sweet little.
Yeah, six and a half and 7 foot rods. The 6.5 and the 7 foot are available in both ultralight and light actions. These are made with a higher modulus carbon fiber. Some people might call that 30 ton, it's a stiffer carbon fiber, so it takes less material, it's got a faster recovery time, super crisp rods, really, really nice progressive actions. They're really sensitive, they're incredibly good casters, and they're built kind of minimalistic, so they kind of have a technical look to them, look and feel, and they're fantastic rods to fish with.
They look awesome. I know most people have, and I know you represent, you know, all of them. And I see here you got 5 different models. What's the sweet one? What's your favorite out of the batch?
Man, I think that 6.5 foot ultralight is just money.
I like it.
Just a fabulous rod.
I like a 6.5 too. 6, you get a little bit short. 7, 7.5 to me for a panfish rod is just, I don't know. I know there's guys that do vertical jigging like a longer rod, but for bluegill, like you can jig with it, you can cast with it. You can do a little contact fishing on the bottom when they go deep in the summer. Down here, we get a bunch of shell crackers, and they'll get deep in the winter. You can sit there and you can take a little mini downsized drop shot rig and a red worm, and you can hammer, I mean, big shell crackers, like big old hubcaps. It's a good time. And then you mentioned your Sentra too. And Peter was actually just telling me he spent some time down there on, I think, Fish River fishing the Sentra. And it was kind of funny. He's a big fly fisherman, but he was like, yeah, man, I've been getting back into conventional. And he's like, I don't know. He said, them fly rods may start gathering a little bit of dust. Tell me some more about the Sentra.
Sometimes that bass will do it too. It's kind of the way I did it. I was a bass angler in college. I got into fly fishing, and that's what got me into this silly industry. Actually, I was totally hooked on that. I don't fly fish near as often as I did in the past now, because bass kind of gets into you. There's something about it.
Oh yeah. Now that is, I mean, football is the national hobby, but down here, bass fishing is a close second. What's your
true?
So I got a small boat, and I'm always looking to carry as few rods as I can for your Sentra. Do you have kind of a do-all size?
Man, if I were, and I'm kind of the same way, right? I'm kind of a do-all guy, minimalistic, kind of my approach. I don't even have any heavy rods in my personal arsenal that I rig. I've got them. I just don't use them that often. First one I'm going to rig up is a 714, just a really nice rod. You throw a lot of stuff on it, small spinner baits, chatter baits, top waters, spinning baits, just a beautiful rod. I obviously I'm an ultralight guy, so I like the lighter end of those as well. I think probably the number one do-all rod is a 735, which is a 7.3 medium heavy. 7.3 and then 5 is a medium heavy, how our numbering system works.
Gotcha.
That's like the number one selling rod in every one of our bass rod series. That's just that you do all rod.
Yeah, that's conventional wisdom. Everybody likes the medium heavy fast, and I see that logic. But I'm sitting here looking. It looks like the 714 you were saying is a medium plus. So I'm guessing that's just kind of sits in between a medium and a medium fast when it comes to rod power.
It does, yes.
Nice. Yeah. I like it. Just split the difference. I like that. There's a lot of people like mediums, a lot of people like medium heavy. Just split the difference. I like it.
It's actually originally kind of designed as a topwater rod. So it's had enough power to cast, you know, those big rovers or the big super spooks, but with a tip that was soft enough to, you know, work them really properly.
Right.
And I just love that action. So it's just one of my favorite actions to fish. It's such good action.
Yeah, no, that looks good. And that's, man, down here, that's my favorite thing. Like, if you can get top water, heck with everything else. I'll find something else to do until the top water fishing gets good. And when it's good, man, I try to be out there every morning. We get a lot down here. We got bass, of course, but we get bowfin. And dude, if you've ever been somewhere that had chain pickerel, if you can catch chain pickerel on top water, you'll be spoiled. You'll never want to do anything.
We've got them in East Texas, actually. Yeah,
really. Do you ever deliberately target them?
Fly rod out there. Yeah.
Yeah. They're fun with a fly rod. I had a guy down, Dr. Matt Lewis, he come down and he fished for chain pickerel with me. And he was writing a book on fly fishing in Alabama, and he specifically wanted to catch chain pickerel. And all the stars lined up when he come down here. We had perfect weather, and I took him up in a feeder creek, and we were sight fishing for him.
Wow, that's cool.
Oh, it's really fun. And they were aggressive. Like, they were everything. You know, like, they were everything you could want them to be. They were everywhere, every place that looked like it had a fish in it. And they were chasing stuff all the way up to the boat. You know, it was like you hear guys talking about musky fishing and doing the figure eight with the lure right there at your boat. Mm-hmm. Same thing. These little dudes would come all the way up to the boat and lock eyes with you and then look back at that fly and take it. It was awesome.
Do you have a nickname for them too?
I have heard, dude, chain pickerel is the fish of a thousand names. I've heard them called jackfish. I've heard them called dogfish.
This is jackfish, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's seven different names for them down here, and they're fun. Slimy jokers, and I got a friend down here, Justin Michael Dunham. He does a lot of the kayak fishing tournaments, and he says the rule of chain pickerel is that you'll never hook one. They always flop off or break your leader unless you're bass fishing and you just want them off so that you can win the tournament. Like, if you in a tournament and you pressed for time, you just want the dang thing off. He said you can't get a hook out of his mouth. He said then
he's
if you go
probably
back,
got every hook. He's probably got every hook in him.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Well, Jim, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I learned a lot. I got some new rods to check out. That's the bad thing about hosting this podcast is you always end up looking at new gear. Like I said, we were just talking with Lee, and he turned me on to a jig head.
That's what keeps people like me employed. Thank you for doing that.
Well, there we go. Yeah, if folks want to check out and learn more about TFO, where's a good place to go? Y'all got a social media site?
www.tforods.com.
Awesome. Definitely go check them out. If y'all shopping for some new rods, check them out. U.S.-made rods. They look sweet. Priced fair. Jim, thank you for your time.
You bet, man. Thank you so much, Nick. Appreciate it.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by... All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@secpond.com. Also brought to you by L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380. Also brought to you by Killer Dock combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com.